President Biden says he is rebuilding and resetting America's relationships around the world. In his first foreign policy address delivered at the State Department today, the president says America is back and credits the rank and file at State for making that happen. President Biden says he plans to partner with our allies on pressing matters such as the pandemic, global warming, threats to democracy and human rights. He saved his toughest words for Russia.
The days of the United States rolling over in the face of Russia's aggressive actions, interfering with our elections, cyber attacks, poisoning its citizens are over.
Police cracked down on demonstrators in Moscow and elsewhere in Russia this week after a court in the capital sentenced opposition leader Alexei Navalny to 3.5 years in prison. Disenchantment over inequality was targeted by Navalny in a YouTube video released shortly after his detention. It has been seen more than 106 million times and counting, which showcased Vladimir Putin's $1.3 billion palace complex in southern Russia. Navalny accuses Putin's forces of poisoning him with the nerve agent Novichok in August. He was taken to Germany, where doctors are credited with saving his life. Tonight, we speak with international journalist Dana Lewis, host of the podcast Backstory with Dana Lewis. He served as Moscow correspondent for NBC News and Moscow bureau chief for Fox News. First question, are these protests different from previous demonstrations in Russia?
Dmitry, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. Certainly not the breadth of them in 11 time zones in every single city that you can imagine. It's very cold. I mean, minus 60 Celsius. And I think that what has changed, and I've thought a lot about this because I've been covering Russia for a long time, these protests are really against President Putin. And up until now, there's been, you know, a lot of dissatisfaction in Russia about the economy and about pension payments and about different issues. But these are targeting the president himself. And after 20 years, you know, Putin in general has always deferred a lot of this and blamed other people. But in the case of this corruption video and Alexei Navalny, which we can talk about, he owns it, and people are blaming him directly. Most of these protests have been pretty peaceful to begin with. And then after the sentencing of Alexei Navalny this week, I mean, I would say that the tactics of the police were suffocating. The numbers of police on the street, I mean, I've never seen that many people in Moscow, that many, you know, police, Oman, as they're called, on the streets, chasing down anybody that they saw that may have been a protester.
How much of a threat are these protests to Vladimir Putin? You say they're all about him this time.
I mean, he is, I think, plunging in popularity now. There have been some polls, especially with youth, and Putin is not the 80% man that he was years ago. I think that, you know, he may be down in 20% and 30% with some of the people. There is a growing anger, and I think that this trial was extremely important. I mean, this was a kangaroo court, but it was a show trial when Navalny was put on trial this week, and he called Putin out. I mean, it's never happened before. This is how it works. They send one to jail to intimidate millions, he said. On the Novichok chemical attack, he said, using the FSB, the Federal Security Service, Putin attempted to commit murder. I'm not the only one. Many know this already, and many others will. And this is what is driving the thieving little man in the bunker crazy. I mean, that's unprecedented in Russia for that to be directed towards President Putin. It's an incredible, brave thing for Navalny to say. And unfortunately, I don't think he's ever going to get out of prison for a very, very long time, because now they're bringing more fraud charges against him. So in addition to the 2.5 years, this preposterous, you know, charge that they've given him for violating his probation when he was in a coma in Germany, now they're bringing other fraud charges against him, and he can face another 10 years, another 15 years.
Is it going too far to say the Putin regime is a mafia state, so as to say every single Russian elite owes his or her riches and power to Putin?
I don't think every single rich Russian owes his bank account to President Putin. I mean, there are legitimate businessmen in Russia, and there are wealthy businessmen in Russia. And some of them have fled the state in order to preserve their wealth because the Kremlin comes to them. And I know some of them, and I've talked to them. And the Kremlin comes and saddles up next to them and says, you're going to give me 50, 60% of your company, or I'm going to take the whole thing. But yeah, Putin himself may be one of the richest men in the world, and he hides it in shell companies and by using designated shareholders that cannot be traced back to him. And that's why this Navalny video, which showed Putin's palace, which supposedly is over $1 billion, a billion with a B, dollars, you know, that shows for years Putin has been pocketing money. And the video, which has been viewed 100 million times now on YouTube, that was put together by Navalny's anti-corruption crusade, shows a lot of the structure that Putin has used in this, you know, kleptocracy, as it's called, to put money in his wallets, and it names who those wallets are. So Putin is never identified as the shareholder, or never identified as the landholder, but this video clearly calls out the way he has structured his finance and used other people to front it for him.
Dana, are there any levers for protesters to pull? An independent judiciary? Can they get a judge on their side, for example?
No way. Controlled by the Kremlin. Mainstream media is controlled by the Kremlin. But I think for the first time, an opposition leader, and there have been a number of them, and some of them have wound up dead, like Boris Nemtsov, who I knew very well, who was shot in front of the Kremlin. I think for the first time, there is a new national political movement. Navalny is a heroic figure right now to many people. I mean, he's a heroic figure to me, even if I don't, you know, support him or support his politics. Just the fact this guy was poisoned, nearly died, and then had the courage to go back to Russia when he knew very well he was going to be arrested at the airport and put in jail, I can't help but admire his courage. And he, I think, will galvanize and be a lightning rod for a new national political movement that will challenge the Duma elections, the parliamentary elections, in September. So Putin has a big problem.
Are too many Russians, though, politically inactive so that Navalny and his sympathizers can't really effectively go out to motivate these folks?
You know, it's such an interesting question, right? Because I was born in Canada, and I grew up with democracy as being, you know, one of those cherished things and the rights of the individual. But after 70 years of communism, you know, a lot of people didn't even process that in Russia. And then after the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 90s, a lot of the polling showed that lawlessness and disorder ran parallel in their minds with democracy. So when you told them democracy is so important, you have to go to the street, a lot of people were like, no, what we want is order. We want order. And I think that's why Putin was so popular in the beginning, because after the disorder of the Boris Yeltsin years, he represented a social contract where pensioners would get their money, where there would be some law and order. But, you know, that candle is burnt. And that's why you see remarkably people holding toilet brushes when they go out and demonstrate against Putin right now, because supposedly in this palace of his, the toilet brushes cost $800, which is more than the average pensioner would get in Russia. And so there's been a collapse of social support for the elderly now, and those former communists, former the elderly from the Soviet period. The youth see no promise for the future, and they are tapped into social media. And whereas the Kremlin has programmed all those television channels and newspapers for all these years and censored them and made sure that they ran the stories that shed a favorable light on Putin, suddenly now in social media has overtaken that. And the Kremlin, I think, just doesn't have its oar in the water. It's not sure what to do, and the only thing it knows how to do is get tough. And that may be with the poisoning of an opposition leader and now flooding the streets with brutal anti-riot police. And I think it will blow up in their face. It will not bring order in the long run. It's going to make a lot of Russians more and more angry.
What can we say finally about U.S.-Russian relations right now? Moscow is still falsely questioning Joe Biden's legitimacy. On the other hand, I know he had a phone call with Putin, and he's not raising expectations the way perhaps other American presidents have about what this relationship is going to be.
Well, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called for Navalny's immediate unconditional release and said he'd work closely with allies to hold Russia accountable for failing to uphold the rights of citizens. Translation? I think that they're going to look at sanctions on this regime, and they will go after a list of about 36 rich Russian oligarchs. At the same time, President Biden knows Russia, and he's pretty practical about it. And I think while criticizing him on human rights, at the same time, you just saw them sign an extension to the START Treaty, which governs the nuclear warheads, 1,500 nuclear warheads held by each country. So I think that they'll be practical with Russia, but I think that they will further isolate Russia and further try to pressure the Putin regime.
I did want to ask what we can look forward to on Backstory with Dana Lewis if we look up your podcast.
Well, I've done a lot on Navalny. I've interviewed Boris Nemtsov, who was shot in front of the Kremlin 5 years ago. I interviewed his daughter, Zhanna Nemtsov, who is connected to Navalny now. And I've also interviewed the former prime minister, Mikhail Kasyanov, who has tried to be an opposition figure in Russia, but came under a lot of pressure from the Kremlin. And I've also just done a new podcast. It talks about Bellingcat. And Bellingcat is an investigative site which uses publicly available intelligence from the internet to solve crimes like identifying the FSB officers who gave Navalny the Novichok nerve agent. And also they identified the GRU, that's military intelligence officers, who carried out the attack in Salisbury, England, 2 years ago, where they poisoned a former GRU member who had been let go out of prison in a prisoner swap. They've done some incredible things about the internet. And I find it really interesting because, you know, we're so much now caught up in what's going on in America and disinformation. Bellingcat makes a real case that there are some really positive things that are coming out of the internet. And one of them is the ability, if you're really seeking truth, not following QAnon and, you know, getting in all these crazy chat rooms that lead you down the rabbit hole, that there's some pretty amazing things that the internet has given us in terms of the pursuit for truth and how there is a movement now. But I find it, you know, incredibly interesting that there is a movement now on the internet, which is very free, very open, not controlled by big media, but is revealing a lot of things we never knew.
International journalist Dana Lewis, he's host of the podcast Backstory with Dana Lewis on Skype.